Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
CSR-podden med Åsa Stenborg och Torbjörn Olofsson.
So, welcome to CSR-pod, which today is in English, actually.
Yes, we have a guest that doesn't speak Swedish, nor does we speak Dutch, so
no.
We speak English.
Yeah, that's unusually, but it will be that today. So, it's Peter Paul van der Weis.
And he is Chief Communication Officer with GRI, Global Reporting Initiative. We might say Global Reporting Initiative is a reporting standard that many sustainability reports in Sweden use.
All large companies, I think, all state-owned companies.
Yes,
use
definitely.
The GRI.
So it's well established in Sweden. And maybe we should put a warning sign for becoming slightly technical when we go into the conversation. So for all of those that are reporting geeks or wants to become reporting geeks, go ahead and listen and really enjoy.
And this is interesting.
It is interesting.
Welcome, Peter Paul.
Thank you very much for having me.
We have the pleasure of fitting in the interview during a few hectic days in Sweden. And what brings you to Sweden and whom have you been meeting with?
Well, we've been touring almost the Nordic. We started off our trip, my colleague and I, in Denmark at the Danish Institute for Human Rights on Monday. And then we took the train to Sweden, which gave us a view of a large part of the southern part of the country, at least, which was very enjoyable. And then yesterday we've met with SIDA and the Global Child Forum. And today Jacob Kiever, the Ambassador for Sustainable Development, invited us for a conversation with Swedish companies and representatives of accounting firms and so on. It was very interesting.
Mm. You're Dutch yourself and you're working in Amsterdam?
Correct.
Do you also live in Amsterdam?
No, I live in Switzerland. I've been married for a couple of years and my wife works in Switzerland. My son goes to school, so I commute. On Mondays I go to Amsterdam and Fridays I go back. Having said that, with the amount of travel I do for my job, Switzerland is as good a place to be based as Amsterdam.
Not a far travel, anyhow. In the middle of Europe, everywhere.
Correct.
Basically.
Yes.
When arriving to Sweden, what is the most striking differences or cultural geekness that we have in Sweden?
I think you're better prepared for the weather.
Ah.
We had a lot of discussion about that, and if you look at the streets, how well children and parents are prepared to deal with cold and dressed up. And in especially in Amsterdam, Switzerland is different, but in Amsterdam specifically, every year it's like they reinvent the fact that it's been cold and that you need to dress up for that somehow. And on top of that, we've enjoyed the food tremendously so far.
Mm, very nice. And we say the same. Every year we kind of, why is this news? Why is there's always snow? And so we're kind of saying the same about us anyhow.
Especially for the trains.
The train has been
horrible. It has come a lot of snow.
Yes, but it's sun today though. Yeah. Let's talk
it's
about
gorgeous today.
It's gorgeous. Yes. It is a spring feeling. You are a true sustainability and communication professional. You are presently working with GRI, but you used to work with World Business Council for Sustainable Development. You have also been working with Lego.
Yep.
Actually, we have interviewed the Lego Sustainability Manager and Dow Chemicals. But you were originally trained in communication and PR. When did you get into the sustainability track in your...
Yes, so I'm the odd one of one of few people who have a degree in advertising.
Mm. That's kind of not relevant anymore, is it? Advertising.
No.
Yes. Sure is.
Okay. I like when I'm wrong. They both kind of look at me like I'm stupid now. Okay. Sorry.
The skills you learn are very relevant. The forms have changed quite dramatically since I studied. But I got engaged, effectively from an early age on, because I've always been engaged in social activities when I was studying and before that. So it was a natural transition. But when I worked at the Dow Chemical Company, this was the time that the sustainability reporting started, and I was part of the sustainability team doing the communications for them. I also did actually the first sustainability report for Dow Chemical, and was engaged with the initial conversation around GRI when it actually did not exist yet.
Oh.
So the circle is round when I joined GRI in June, because having been engaged with them and have been following their development for so long, joining them has been very interesting.
A risk needing to stay there until the end then, because the circle is formed, then you have to kind of know.
That would imply that there is an end.
No, okay. No, there's not. Okay, I ignore that.
Okay, we were talking to each other before and said that you're probably the best person ever to do this. We would like to hear a short, crispy, so-called elevator pitch about Global Reporting Initiative, the GRI.
So the Global Reporting Initiative, thanks for the challenge, by the way, is really a system that normalizes, if you will, societal expectations for companies. And what it will allows you to do as a company, but also as other stakeholders, is to use a common language to discuss your behavior of entities and how they behave and become more sustainable. And setting that standard for the conversation and having this common language allows a much more informed debate, and also leads to better decisions around becoming more sustainable.
Well, that it was not so short, but it was crispy. So.
Yeah, well, it was an elevator. I mean, it was an elevator ride.
Is that you didn't say which floor.
No, that's true. I think that was like 3 or 4 floors at least,
yeah,
right?
That's great.
Yeah.
So if we look inside the GRI organization, Global Reporting Initiative is a non-profit organization. How many staff are you all together, and how are you organized?
Okay, so we're a relatively small NGO, but we have a staff of about 110 people, mainly based in Amsterdam, but we have also offices around the world where we work collectively with companies and, for example, stock exchanges to understand how reporting can help drive transparency and drive better decision making.
So why are you in Amsterdam? Is it because you're from...
But he's not founding this.
No.
He wasn't the founder of GRI.
I guess there's a reason.
There's probably a reason. It was started at the UN, in the US. The UN got engaged with Ceres, which is an organization in the US focused on sustainable investment, and came out of the discussions around following the Exxon Valdez accident. And the question of how do you make companies more responsive and make more transparent what they do. And at some point the decision was made that the organization would be formalized. And the Dutch government was one of the governments that offered to host the organization. So that's why we came to Amsterdam. Mm.
Is it? I mean, 110 people is quite a lot for a non-governmental organization that's worked with such a specific issue as reporting. Because in some way, reporting is a specific area or field. 110 people, is that government funded or how are you funded?
There's two parts to the answer to that question. One, first of all, setting a standard and the way we do using a multi-stakeholder approach requires a lot of resources, because we want to be very thorough and we want to make sure that we get all the right stakeholders engaged. So you can imagine that takes a lot of people to set up a standard and manage the development of the standard. So that's one of the reasons why we have the staff that we have. Mm. To your question on the funding, we get about 30% of our funding through government grants and 70% through services that we provide to companies.
Oh.
So either they become a member of our community where they can exchange ideas on reporting and there's a lot of peer learning going on, or we provide training on how to use the standards. And the third element is services that we provide to help you make sure that the report meets the criteria that are set out in the standards. So we don't write reports for companies. Mm. We don't assure reports, but we help you make sure that you've ticked all the right boxes when you develop the report.
Mm. You have recently celebrated half a year in the position in GRI, right?
Yes.
And that's usually a time when you start finding your way around and knowing all the people by name or something. What have you found that is the real asset of the kind of GRI organization?
It's the commitment from all the people in the organization to transparency and to trying to create a more sustainable world.
Mm. And what is the weakness of the organization?
I think the weakness is that we're not growing fast enough to keep up with the demand. Mm. And I'm not sure if that's a weakness, but that's I would position that as a reality. Societal expectations are changing. We like to develop more standards more quickly, but that's where the limitations that we run into.
So
our ambition level versus the reality of only 100 people.
Yeah, so there is a frustration of wanting to become bigger, improving stuff faster.
Yeah, not for the sake of getting bigger, not like a corporation that wants to become more profitable, but we believe that we want to continue to develop our standards.
So taking a step back, what would you like to achieve within the coming 3 years?
I think one of the things that I would like to achieve, is especially with the two teams that I'm leading on communication and on government affairs, is we want to further strengthen the references and the uptake of reporting in legislative instruments so that companies are more likely to start reporting.
The first draft of GRI standards was released in 1990, and the first full version was released in the year 2000. GRI was one amongst many reporting standards that are out there. But how many other standards are actually out there? There are this kind of vast and big and large as GRI is. Who is your competition?
To me, those are not the same questions. So let's start with the first question.
Okay. I'm making confusing questions, yes.
There are a lot of disclosure requirements that come out of very specific corners in specific industries focused on a specific effort. I think if you look at the bigger picture, who covers the whole range of topics of sustainability, GRI is by far the largest in terms of numbers of uptake and the companies of people companies using it. The two other frameworks that come close are, in terms of topics, the SASB in the US and CDP, the formerly known the Carbon Disclosure Project. But again, they, for example, only look at three topics specifically.
So the GRI standard has evolved during the years. And who is driving this change?
We have a very elaborate and deliberate governance model where GRI as an organization doesn't drive the development of standards, but our independent Global Sustainability Standards Board, the GSSB, which is a multi-stakeholder independent board that sets the direction for the standard setting department and that ensures that there's due process followed, that the selection of topics are vetted by that group, and all that information is made public and very openly available for everybody to see.
The present version of the reporting framework is the GRI standards, and there's a very significant step from the G4, the former version, to the GRI standards.
Yeah.
Could you explain why?
Yes, so when we launched the G4 standard, the big step forward we made was that we based it around this question of materiality. What is material to a company? And a company was supposed to report on the material topics. That principle is still at the heart of our standards. But what we realize is if you every time have to update the entire set of the framework in order to launch a new standard, you're always too late. Developments are quicker. So what we decided to do is to turn it into a standard that allows us to be more flexible in terms of what we update currently and continuously. So we can now have our base set of standards, 101 to 103, which set out the basic framework for reporting and the principles and the management system. And then once you've determined materiality, you report on specific disclosures on the topic that are material to you. Now, let's take water, for example. There's a lot of debate has been around water and the water issue over the years. So in June, we were able to update the water standard to reflect that latest thinking around water.
So you made it into Lego, basically. So you can pick one piece and replace it by another and don't do the whole thing at once.
Yes, building blocks.
So if you got your certification for the G4 standard, so you have to...
This is
a very personal question. If you got your certification for the G4 standards, do you have to do it again to understand the new GRI standards?
The new GRI standards, the Lego version.
I understand this is a personal question.
Yes, but this is the answer is yes. Essential question for the two of us.
Exactly, it's what we experienced.
Now you will realize that once you dive into it, there's a lot of things familiar.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So we didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but yes, the things have changed.
Would you say that there is an ideal GRI user, for example, size of company or maturity and sustainability engagement or so on?
I would hope not. I would hope that we tailor to the needs of society at large in terms of making it transparent, and that all companies will find ways to use our standard to engage in conversations and to drive better decision-making.
Big or small or old or...
So no country is too small to use this?
No, I do believe, and this is a criticism that we hear from time to time, it is a lot of work, and nobody's going to argue that it's not. So it requires a level of resources to do it. So that would be a potentially limiting factor.
Okay, so look at your budget and the staff you have before you step into it, realizing that if I'm kind of jumping for the GRI reporting, it will require more muscle, basically.
But you could also say, as a small company...
Didn't go for that. He said it first, and I'm going
The notion that you can use the GRI standard initially to inform your internal decision-making, that doesn't mean you have to already produce a full report. But starting with understanding the standards and starting the kind of questions that the market and society is going to ask of you is step one.
Yeah, so let's call that cherry picking. Is that okay to have a business say that I want to take this one and this one and this one, and those are specific and interesting for me? Is that could we call it that? Is that
That could happen. Then you wouldn't do a GRI report, but you would at least use our standards, and on those topics you can engage with other people because you still have that common language on the topic.
But we've both been working with GRI reporting as well, and when I look at the G4 standard, it had 154 potential reporting points. When I downloaded the GRI standards, I downloaded 37 documents, PDFs.
Yes.
And it is kind of a large entity to go into. It's rather complicated, and many times you have to remind yourself, I have the usual intelligence of usual people, so I need to stick and understand. That was what I tried to remind myself of going through the... Hasn't this fitting all and becoming the large kind of framework for a very complicated question also made it really hard to use?
Not necessarily, because I think for the sake of your argument, you skip over the most important point of our standard model, which says you start with the first three standards, 101 to 103. Then you do your materiality analysis, and you only download and read the standards that are reflective of those issues that you've determined to be relevant and immaterial to your company.
But I think that's part of the point, because I think you give an idea that I can pick and choose. I can kind of find my own track. But when you get into it, it becomes a nested world. And it is hard to find that track. That's the kind of reflection of when from user-friendly perspective. And I see your effort, but I still see it's getting very heavy.
Yes, and so nobody's going to deny that it requires a lot of work. I still believe that the way we're set up with the materiality as a first step to weed through and make the selection. And then if you go to the standards, you'll actually see each standard has a set of mandatory disclosures and additional disclosures, which is another way where you can choose depending on how important a specific issue is for you. But nobody's said that it's not going to be any work.
No. I'm not questioning the work. I'm questioning the easiness of the work, actually. So I agree with the idea of also being benchmarked because work, and I agree with the idea of having a framework. We need some kind of framework. Yeah. But I feel frustrated that it becomes too technical and it becomes something that is put up on me instead of me being creative. Because that's my other point. I find that either you're a huge company that has the muscle to do this and they do it well. And mm-hmm. they have strong enough to know what are issues. And they may tweak the GRI. They can use it and they can select because they're strong. But then you come to these middle-sized companies that aren't maybe experienced in it. And they don't have the... When meeting with GRI, it's so complete that it becomes the Bible. And you don't tweak it. All of a sudden, we're in Sweden and we're reporting on stuff that feels that this is not essential to me. A company who's been working with... Say, for example, I've been working with discrimination the last 3 years. It was an important issue for me, and the discrimination I've been focusing on is different nationalities. But I still need to report on gender issues of male and female. And why, if this has been my essential point, and then I know you're going to answer me by saying you don't have to, but the kind of the standard tells me to. So it oppresses creativity. It oppresses the idea of actually pushing through what is important for you.
But the base of setting the standard is not what you want, is a reflection of the request from society.
But society is different in different places. And, yes. And Swedish society is different to different
and,
places.
And, we're a
one business is different to another business. This is a big issue in Sweden right now. Yeah. So I need to adjust, and I need to adjust what's relevant for me. So this overloading of everything needs to be compared also becomes, I can't do it. It becomes too much. I'm not even going to try.
We are trying to set a global standard that's used for as many companies and situations as possible. There are always going to be pushbacks on some ends, but I think what we've been able to do is have using a modular system that is as flexible as possible. And of course, there's always going to be situations where you think, well, this isn't quite fit for me, but I think the strength of our standard is that it is... set by a broad set of multi-stakeholders, that it is globally applicable.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are inherent challenges.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I'm coming to the point of saying, fit all may actually reflect in doesn't fit anybody. And we had Torbjörn Westman, who you met this morning, the auditor for KPMG, and he reflected by saying, I don't think this is. Now I feel really mean.
Yeah.
He said, I'm not a believer of the kind of the large scope reporting. I believe we need to have different kind of sets for different issues because they become sharper. And especially for him that goes in and kind of digs down into specific issues, say, the big is not going to fit. We have to have those specific. What would be your... You met him this morning. Did you say that?
I met him this morning, but I
didn't say that.
He didn't say that. He said it to us. We're gossiping now.
He made similar comments, and I, from an assurance perspective, I can see that he's struggling. So Torben did make a similar comment this morning, and I think it's important to realize that again, the standard is a way of setting a common language to conversation. You still need to have that conversation. You might want to have additional topics to be discussed, but what we see here is also a reflection of the development of the standard. This is why we're constantly developing. And if you look at the parallel with the financial industry, those discussions were there in the beginning as well. And at some point, we need to settle on a set of standards that we start reporting on and then have the follow-up conversation. And Torben understands that pretty well.
So is this opinions that you meet a lot? Or is it the first time that
no,
you hear this stuff that Åsa is telling you now? I mean, I would presume that you would meet these opinions quite a lot.
We heard the point that it's quite a bit of work and that it's complicated, yes. We hear that a lot. The pushback is if we make it too simple, then the pushback will be, well, this is too simple, it's not telling us anything. So we're constantly trying to find that balance between detail and broad topics. And that's a balance, and that's a difficult game to play. But I think we're striking the balance pretty well. But it's also something that's on our radar that we constantly look at to see if we can further improve.
When you're doing your material questions, and I like the material questions, so let's be honest by that. I like the idea that a business should actually say, what is essential to me in my business and what I'm doing? And that's a kind of eternal search of finding those issues. You focus at asking the stakeholders. There is lots kind of stakeholders dialogue. The idea is that me as a company would then talk to the world around me and say, what are the important issues for me? And stakeholders is kind of a theory, could we call it a theory? Kind of a method maybe? Mm-hmm. A method that you would talk to people that influences you and that are influenced by you. Right?
Yeah.
Who are the most important? The people that influence the business or the people that are influenced by the business?
I think from our material, the definition is the impact on the people that the business has on the people.
Yes.
So the people that influence the business, but the other way around.
So the owners would not be, in many cases, a very important group. Because owners are sometimes kind of, they influence the business, but they aren't that influenced by the business.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. For our definition of materiality, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
We also have a lot of science-based frameworks, like the planetary boundaries, the natural step principle, and the donuts, and so on. Why not use them instead of the stakeholder dialogue?
I think those frameworks are being brought into the discussions when we develop new standards and new thinking that comes out of those frameworks. We try to reflect in our standards. But again, we are trying to take the full set of stakeholders when we develop the standards. So that thinking is brought in, just like circular economy, for example, is now being brought into the development of our new waste standard. So we take the thinking on board and through the stakeholders that we gather to develop a new standard that's being brought in.
Okay, because when you're asking the stakeholders, isn't there a risk that you get answers that depends on media storms rather than large cross-sectional changes, which is what we actually need?
You mean when the company asks the stakeholders in their materiality assessment? If they do the process correctly, they would have hopefully built in some security steps to make sure that they go beyond the latest news report. And just for example, as we do when we do our multi-stakeholder process to develop standards, we bring together key thought leaders and then we put the standard out for public comment for a long period of time to ensure that we have all the voices heard when we develop the standard. Mm.
But listening to what you're saying now and saying the stakeholders that are most important are those that are influenced by the company, I think very often when I read GRI reports, they kind of done a very shallow then analyze of who are the stakeholders. And then saying what you're saying now, that we have to go beyond their opinion of today, I think there's a large risk that you get stuck with the people that influences you, meaning your owner, your customers and those media, and that you become rather the tail instead of the driver of your sustainability agenda. And I even have that experience of a large scale company who kept on having a very kind of ambitious and interesting stakeholder dialogue for the sustainability department. But what happened was that the business understood that we can develop and we can actually solve all the sustainability challenges. So the business kind of advanced, they speeded ahead the sustainability department because they were still doing dialogue with everybody else. And why not kind of push in the sustainability kind of science that is in there, getting into business and say, these are the big challenges for you? It's kind of a more black and white way of doing it. Why do that instead? Why skip out the stakeholders, put in the science and go? That's quicker.
Is it?
Yes, I believe so. I sincerely believe so.
But again, go back to our role in this conversation. We are the standard setter, so we try to drive the standard for a conversation with stakeholders, with investors, what have you.
But the stakeholders will not be informed. That's my essential point. Few stakeholders will see the essence of what needs to be happening.
So the point I was trying to make is that as a standard setter, our role is to define the what of the conversation. We are as concerned as you on some of the qualities of the reports that come out of it. So what we can do is make the standards as clear as possible be as clear as possible how you should do a stakeholder engagement process. How that's then actually done by companies. That's where Torbjörn and friends come in to help make sure that the processes that they use are assured and appropriate.
And I would follow you in every step of the way and say you are the standard setters. You would then have the optimal process. And I'm saying maybe you don't even have the optimal process anymore. Maybe you need to skip out the stakeholders and put in the science, because science is out there right now. This wasn't true like 10 years ago, but it is true very much now. When Dow made their first sustainability move, they went with the natural step framework and had an internal row saying, what is the important issues for us? And especially interesting in a chemical industry where many stakeholders are overly negative and would not see the essence of why should we have a chemical industry, which we know we need to have. But it has to be different. I think this this power of internal change when you can use a science-based framework makes a hell of a difference.
Yeah, and what we try to do is incorporate that science-based thinking in our standards.
And but I'm suggesting
just for
replace
the record,
we
stepped back from the TNS and actually went to the GRI report.
Yeah, yeah, but
pretty quickly
one
after,
does not
so.
One does not replace the other. Yeah. I'm saying the method, and I think you can do the two. That's my point. I think you can do the two things. And I think when a reporting entity sets out to identify the essential questions, I think you're having a mistake, because I think the sustainability worker, that whatever sustainability force you have at a company, pre-deciding to report, has to set out the essential questions. And I'm saying maybe we're trying to make the tail drive the dog in having the dog drive the tail. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not the reporting who should stipulate what we should be doing. It is the strategy, the sustainability strategy and the business who should be deciding. And then you can use GRI as becoming compatible with others.
But isn't that what I just said?
Well, maybe. Do we agree, Torbjörn? You have to be the judge of this.
Because I think that's the point. As a standard setter, we can define how you measure and report transparency and we can define what is expected in larger society, what as a company you do. The company still has to take its own strategy in terms of what it wants to achieve, and science-based targets are definitely part of that, just as we try to be as science-based as possible in our standards.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So is there several, could there be different way of interpret the GRI standards? I mean, it sounds like that. That you see the GRI standards as something to work with and from, and you see it as a thing that forces companies to do it in the wrong way.
I think the massiveness of the debate around, because I think it's massive and I think it's important, but I think there is a too much attention given to reporting. I'm going to be very unfair to you now, because what we need to talk about is instead a business strategy and having business be part of solving the problem. Mm-hmm. And the dog has to be led by the nose, not by the tail. And I think very much in sustainability world has been focused around reporting. And it's like telling your son, you can go out and I'm not going to tell you what to do. You can spend the night and here's 100 crowns or 200 or 500. I'm not going to tell you anything what to do. But you're going to, when you come back, we're going to have a discussion of what you've done. And I think it's kind of unfair to the businesses. And I don't.
But actually, how can that be a standard organization's problem?
Well, I think, and no, it can't be, and I agree with that, but I think the standard organization, this was my kind of nail when we had the training, was that the standards organization has taken upon itself to define a process in which defining the strategy, and I think that's where we go wrong. I think the strategy of what you're doing in your sustainability must be before, we must be happening earlier, and then you reap what you've done. No, and that's like telling your son, this is my moral, this is what I want to achieve. You can't do this, you can't do that. Go out, do your business. Okay, a year has passed. What have we done?
I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of the role of the materiality analysis. We don't, as a standard setter, give you the guidelines on how to set your strategy. We're just giving, through our standards, a standardized set of indicators that allow you to have conversations with various stakeholders. So your strategy is still your own.
But why would, if I decided my strategy, a year has passed, why would I then have a discussion with my stakeholders whether or not this was my material questions? I've already done it. It's done. If you offer me standards of reporting it so I can compare one business or one company to another, yes, I agree completely with that.
But because our standards define your material impact on society at large, it doesn't define your business decision on what kind of products you want to make or where you make it.
But isn't this the same?
No, because it talks about the impact of your operations and your organization on society at large. Now, you still have your responsibility as a producer of a good to decide what good you want to make, what market you want to solve. But so we don't help with that.
Yeah, but if you internalize sustainability as we want to do in businesses, mm-hmm. isn't sustainability in that business analysis of what I'm going to make, how I'm going to make it? That's part of your business decision. So it has to be kind of happening before. And that's where the material questions are important to have.
But that's a different kind of materiality. The materiality to your company and the materiality to society are different.
But isn't that the same?
Question.
Isn't sustainability a way of looking at the world of saying, my responsibility is larger than I thought saw before? Sustainability in itself is a method of widening the scope over time and over perspective of my responsibility. I see my impact before I do it. I see my impact on the future generation. That's the essence of.
So, I think as a standard setter, we are not in the business of helping you develop your strategy. I think what's relevant to this conversation that we're having today is, I think where we started by specifically 20 years ago looking at the company's impact, because that was the problem and issue we tried to solve. I think what we see now in terms of a trend, and which I think is where we need to go, is that we're now much more looking at what we call data users. So people, what do they do with that information in the report? One of the users is the strategy department in the company. Mm-hmm. So now that we know the impact of our current operations, is that what we want? Is that where we want to go? Or do we as a company with our beliefs and values want to change our behavior? Well, the reporting and the standards give us an indication of what our current impact is. The question whether or not you appreciate that impact and you think that's the right impact, that's a strategic decision. The other part that we see now in terms of interest is we now start seeing investors looking at your material impacts and say, well, hang on, as an investor, that's not the kind of impacts that I want to support. So again, another data user is now using the data. What we do as a standard setter is facilitate that conversation, because both discussions are now being taken and driven by the same set of data, the same definition of what an impact is. And that's our role in that conversation. Mm-hmm. Our role is not to set the standard per se, the strategy mm-hmm. per se, nor is our role to set the investment strategy per se. Mm-hmm. But we have, by having that standard, created a common understanding and a common language where those two now can talk together.
Let's move on. Why is it important to do annual reports on sustainability?
I think the question is, why is it important to report? The question of frequency is
So it's not necessary to do it on a yearly basis?
No, depending on the impact, there might be a higher frequency desirable or not.
More frequently, less frequently than a year.
But that's going to depend on the topic and the availability of the content. But ideally, there are topics where you will want to or would have a benefit from providing more regular updates.
Hmm. Do you have a strong opinion of the on auditing of the sustainability reports? How you do it?
Should it be done? I mean, that's a...
I think we asked this because we have had a discussion before, because we don't have that demand in Sweden
no,
to audit.
No, well, the law of big businesses being required to do a sustainability reporting did not include the auditor to actually check the report. It required the auditor to check that there was a report, a sustainability report, but not to actually check it. And I think there are countries in Europe that requires an actual audit of the sustainability report.
Italy or
I think
France.
We were at France. Yeah. So do you have an idea? Do you have an opinion that it should be audited or not? Does it matter to you? Or do you have kind of an idea about it?
Well, I think an audited report will add a level of trust to the report. So in that sense, I think there's value in there. And we are actively engaged in trying to define what sort of the standard of assurance would be. Because I think what we see currently is that it's hard to assure the report because an assured standard, as you would have for example, for financial reports, doesn't exist at the moment. So it's something we're looking into as an opportunity.
What, in your opinion, should be the most important target group for annual sustainability report?
I don't like to rank audiences per se, but I think, to name a couple, I think internal management is an important audience. Staff at large is an important audience. I think depending on your material topics, it could be the community you operate in, it could be your business partners, it could be the investment community. So it's very hard to rank them necessarily.
It depends on what company you're talking about.
Yeah, on your business model and your material topics, yes. Mm.
I just found that in my experience that when you come into a company and you ask who is the target audience for this report that we're going to make, the answer is very often everybody. And a report that is targeted towards everybody becomes nobody's, basically, because it's not, you know, it's not sharp enough or kind of clear enough, or it speaks another language.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? How the dilemma of being everybody's?
Yeah, and I absolutely, and I think every company will actually have. In the back of their mind, a set of prioritized audiences.
They should.
Having worked in communication departments for most of my life, you'll have your preferred or your ranked audiences. Yes.
Okay, that should be there actually. Do you know how often a sustainability report is actually used or read? Is there any kind of, I don't know, science on it? Do we have an impression? Because there is a lot of effort put into it, as you said.
Yes.
So how often is it used and by whom?
Well, no, in the sense that do we have numbers of who uses it? No, because just as our standards, we have only limited idea of how many companies use it because it's a public good.
Hmm.
The moment you put a report out as an organization, it also becomes a public good. So it's very hard. But we have anecdotal evidence that the financial sectors are beginning to look at it more. We know civil society is looking at any much more. So we, as I said, the trend that we see is that there is more demand for reports and the data in the reports by larger groups.
And then thinking about how the pace of communication, because I think there is a challenge here of saying that we're going to have an annual report and it's usually end of year, then we're starting writing it, and by March it's out there. And by March, in the kind of flow, information flow that we're having today, it's old news. It's kind of past news. Who wants to speak about last year in March when you're in the new year? Is that a kind of thing you see of reports need to be done differently and faster and more often? Or how can we change that cycle so it doesn't become old when we believe in, here's the news of our 3 months old, you know?
I mean, first of all, there's always the element of actually producing it. So things take time.
Yes, it does.
And that's inherent in the model. For a lot of the information, because it's as important as the actual data is the narrative. How do you get there? That narrative is still relevant. So could I see in the future more frequent reporting? Absolutely. And technology will allow that. But I think we shouldn't underestimate the value of the narrative that's been captured with that data and in that data. That's part of the story. And that's relevant longer than just at one point in time.
Okay, so the narrative by reading what's between the lines when you read the report is maybe more important than the actual number. Is that what you're saying now?
Depends on the topic, but I think as a company, but also as a stakeholder, you're interested also to see what is the company doing different to improve its performance.
Okay. So if in 10 years, if we meet, I'm just kind of have a spur of the inspiration.
This is an invite.
No, this is, yes, this is definitely an invite. Anytime in 10 years. No, I'm kind of seeing into the future saying maybe in 10 years, the GRI will be a huge database where you can put in your numbers and they're fresh and they're 1 month or 3 months old or whatever. And biannual, you do a narrative where you actually put the numbers into a context, and the context or the narrative is much shorter and sharper, but the numbers are actually data-based, kind of a flow. Is that going to happen?
I think that's definitely possible. Now, it will not be GRI who runs the database.
Why not?
Because as a standard setter, that's not our role necessarily, and that becomes a commercial model that I don't think is our place to do. But I could see much more web-based applications that allow for faster update and then the communication pieces around it that tell the narrative can have different forms. We are, in that sense, not limited to form or describing as a standard set of what the form is. We just say, if this is a material topic, this is how you should report on it. Mm. How you report on it, I think technology moves so fast that both of us have no idea how it will look in 10 years.
But would you welcome that change? Would that be a welcome change for you? So if I tomorrow send up the GRI database, I've got so many things to do now. The GRI database where everybody can enter their number and it's quick and it's user-friendly and it's gamification-inspired or whatever.
You haven't mentioned blockchain yet.
No, that's true. Let's throw in blockchain. Yeah. Would you welcome that kind of that
absolutely.
Database?
Listen,
the CSR pod database.
The starting point for our standard is that we want to inform a global debate and decision making. So the easier available for more people the data is, the happier we are.
He said we should start it actually.
Yeah,
Torbjörn, we got stuff to do.
Consider that after the show.
You might need a bigger computer than you have.
Yeah. So in your role, you have a very global perspective of the sustainability development. And since sustainability is not really one issue, but a large bundle of many, we would like your input on what countries or what country are the front runners in some sustainability issues. So are you ready? Here it comes. Clean energy.
Are you on the topic?
Yeah.
Country by
topic? Yeah. We will make a list here. These countries are the best in clean energy.
I can't tell you that. Because
sure, you can. You see the global perspective.
Yes. So as a GRI representative, I can't give you that information because we don't value the output of the reports. I can tell you that I think the Nordic countries are leading. And in terms of reporting, I can tell you that I was, for example, impressed with the commitment that I heard this morning talking to Swedish companies and how they take reporting and their responsibilities serious. And they raised some of the questions you raised here today, and I think those are the right questions to debate. So I think in terms of reporting, I can say that the Nordic countries and Sweden leading the pack there is very strong in reporting. Mm.
But you couldn't tell it on separate questions.
It's not like in your discussion you would see that, yes, we get most questions regarding this from this country, and this is where they want to push the standard further. Because in your stakeholder dialogue, you would have the potential of seeing the interest of specific industries or specific countries.
Countries, yes. Industry, not necessarily, because we try to make sure that no industry or country is overrepresented in any of the debates, because we want to try to get this global consensus. So in that sense, no. I would have to go back to some of the feedback, and if you were to analyze the feedback on any specific issue, you would probably get to a ranking there, but I don't have that present.
Not in mind.
No.
So there is no use to ask you about clean energy, climate change, human rights.
He said in his former position, he said China on clean energy. That's actually...
No, the Nordics.
No, clean energy. You had an opinion that China is actually really developing on clean energy and solar power.
We're here today?
No, in an early interview that he made when he used to work with the Sustainable Business Council.
At the World Business Council. At that time.
At that time, you did.
But this is 6 years ago.
Oh, okay.
China was definitely stepping up on the development of clean energy technologies. Yeah. But that's a data point from 6 years ago.
Yes,
so,
truly. Yeah.
So the one point that we got your answer was on the reporting of sustainability, that where you found that the Nordic countries are quite good.
Yes. Yes.
And the other points we have to just drop, I guess, then.
Definitely. Let's drop
human rights, circular economy, food security, and so on.
Leave the questions.
Well, in terms of ranking, yes, I think these are all very important topics.
Mm. Of course.
Yes.
When working with sustainability, and I think when you describe the GRI organization, there is this commitment to sustainability and the commitment, the understanding that we need to drive the pace of change when it comes to sustainability. Yeah. And there is the frustration that we need to do more. And I think this is something where we kind of all share that are engaged professionally with sustainability, and not only professional, but everybody can understand and see the potential for, or the need for change. Do you have a kind of despair and say, it's not fast enough, we're not doing the right things, we're having the wrong debates? Do you only get into that gloomy room?
Only very briefly.
Very briefly.
Very briefly. I'm more and more a fan of Hans Rosling's statement that we should take it from a positive angle.
Yes.
I do see a lot of good news. And again, this morning in that conversation, we talked about the burden of reporting, but then at the same time, one person says, yes, it's too much, and then one side of the room said, well, hang on that specific topic, I need more. Mm. Yeah, I know, I understand it, but then here... The debate is happening. Is it going fast enough? No, I think we all think it should go faster. But does that make me gloomy? No, because I do think that we're definitely going in the right direction. And now seeing stock exchanges taking up ESG reporting as mandate for listed companies, seeing Italy basically making it mandatory for all their companies, seeing Sweden looking at the NFI directive from Europe and saying, no, the threshold of 500 plus employees is not good enough. We'll reduce it to 50. Mm. So I see a lot of good. I see a lot of progress that I think is very encouraging.
Could you pinpoint one thing that actually really inspired you when you said you kind of you're an optimistic person, so your optimistic level is quite high. But would you say there is something that recently kind of I looked at this and I said, yes, this is maybe something you return to when you go into your gloomy room? Of saying, okay, this will inspire me to go further, do more.
Can we do that question later? I need to think about it. I think it's a great question.
But it's the last question.
So no, I actually have more questions.
Oh, so. He has another question. Well, let's go into that question. Yeah. Then Torbjörn, you got the...
Well, you have been here in Sweden now for a couple of days, you said, and you're traveling back tonight.
Yes.
And what will you do next week? What challenges do you have ahead of you?
The first challenge is to get agreement on Friday on the outline and the topics for our upcoming global conference. Mm. So as GRI, every 3 years we organize a big global conference around transparency. And, we're kickstarting that on Friday and getting everybody.
Where
on
will
the
it
same
be held?
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. Is it always in Amsterdam?
It has always been in Amsterdam. I think hopefully the next one will be outside of Amsterdam. Mm.
And what date? You were about to say the dates.
March 4th to 6th, 2020.
2020. Okay, we'll have to schedule that in our calendar then, 2020.
You could live podcast from Amsterdam.
Yeah. Oh, we would love that. We'll come anytime.
That would be really nice.
The whole time.
Yeah.
So let's go into your gloomy room then. What would inspire you when you're in a gloom of saying sustainability is actually not working well? It could be personal and it could be kind of large issues, but it could be something
where sustainability isn't working well.
Well, when you feel that, okay, it's not fast enough. I have a down day and I want to look at this video clip or I want to whatever that kind of sets. This is...
Well, I am concerned when I watch some of the global political news at the moment where for political reasons, topics like climate change are downplayed.
Yes.
That worries me. It worries me that we had a COP in Poland at the place which was too much focus on coal.
Mm.
Those things worry me.
Yes.
At the same time, on the positive side, when I see research on consumer behavior and value-driven consumer behavior, and you see especially the younger generations taking a much more positive view on this and even rethinking what the three of us have taken for granted as consumer behavior, I think that's very positive.
So the next generation inspires you?
The next generation definitely inspires us, yes.
Lovely.
Thank you very much that you came to us.
My pleasure, I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.